The Mad Money Machine is proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors. Check them out at ifa.com. This quote from William Bernstein. A decade ago, I really did believe that the average investor could do it himself. After all, the flesh was willing. The vehicles were available, and the math wasn't that hard. I was wrong. Having emailed and spoken to thousands of investors over the years, I've come to the sad conclusion that only a tiny minority, at most 1%, are capable of pulling it off. Heck, if Helen Young Hayes, Robert Sanborn, Julian Robertson, and the nation's largest pension funds can't get it right, what chance does John Q. Investor have? Mad Money Machine 46 Mad Money Machine. Middle of November. Hi, this is Paul Douglas Boyer. You're downloading the Mad Money Machine show. I want to thank you very much for doing that. I have not pod faded yet. I did write a posting out to Yahoo podcast groups asking people for their ideas about what I should do with this show. And I'll tell you some of their thoughts coming up. Talk a little bit more about the Xbox and all the goodies that are happening in that. I've got a tool in the crib for you and a whole lot more. Blazing light beneath the bay. I don't know why I get such a kick out of that nonsense. Well, like I mentioned, I put a posting out to Yahoo Groups, the podcasting group forum out there. Other podcasters subscribe to it, and they talk about podcasting and what to do with their shows and how to make their shows more successful and all this stuff. And I put a posting out there that says, what should I do with my show? Should I wrap it all up? And if so, how? Yeah. I said, I'm interested in getting your ideas with what I should do with the podcast. I told them I've done 45 shows, about one a week. But the topic that I'm doing my podcast on, which was Jim Cramer's Mad Money, I'm just not interested in much anymore. In fact, you know what? When I started this show, I bragged about how I had never missed a Mad Money episode. Now I can say I rarely watch one. How about that? Now that I can download the show notes from the show, I just do that. I put them into Evernote, like I'd mentioned on the first couple of shows, the tool in the crib. It keeps a chronological listing of files inside of one notepad. And I can do keyword searches on stocks that he's mentioned and everything, so I don't really need to watch the show. So I told people out at the Yahoo groups that my dilemma is this. You folks listen to the show. I hate to just say goodbye to you, basically. I mean, I don't have an audience the size of any kind of ninja show, but it's more than just my friends and family listening, too. I'd like to keep you entertained as best I can. I'd like to inform you about investments as best I can. But I originally started this show talking about stock picks, and over the course of the year, I discovered that picking stocks is the wrong way to invest. And the real way to invest is simpler, a lot simpler, and it's boring. And probably... Well, I know of some other podcasts that talk about investing this way, but if you listen to them long enough, they kind of get monotonous, too. The other thing is, I don't have anything to sell. Most other investing podcasts that you'll find out there have something they're trying to sell you, believe it or not. And I'm not in it for the money, because goodness knows I don't make... a whole lot of money doing the show. I make a whole lot more money doing my job. And as I mentioned on the Market Watch interview with Frank Barnico, I wonder what should I do with the show now that there are so many other investing shows out there since the time I started mine. I gave the the Yahoo folks five choices. Number one, just quit. Stop it. Don't do another show. Throw away everything that's been built up. Or number two, just keep going. Going with the same stuff. Grin and bear it. Try to make it fun. Number three, keep going but change topics. Risk alienating the audience. Number four, sell the whole thing to someone that is interested and help with the transition to the new owner. Or five, other. I did get some good feedback. For example, from Mike, he said, ouch, that's a tough decision. Personally, I would bring it up to the listeners. Isn't that why podcasting is better than radio, TV? Evo Terra wrote, quitting is the easiest option, and I doubt that anyone would firebomb your house because of your decision. If you choose this option, I'd suggest recording a final thanks, I'm out of here episode so that you leave no one guessing as to what is going on. He also says, as far as keeping going with the same stuff, I wouldn't. If it's not fun, it's not fun, and that's going to show. Assuming you do it for fun, which it sounds like you do. Or the third option, keep going and change topics. That might happen if you start talking about Zen gardening. He's talking about alienating the audience. But would it be so bad if you made a minor adjustment? Most of the folks I know who dabble in the stock market have the majority of the money invested in boring things. Talk a bit about the boring, but keep talking about some of the cool stocks which you've heard of. Drop the show down to a fraction of the link if that was necessary, but lead your audience in the right direction. Yeah, well, that's kind of what I've been doing. Number four, sell the whole thing. If that option is on the table, then why not? Carl Cravens wrote, maybe you could find someone passionate about your topic and willing to continue who meets your standards and is willing to pay for a pre-built audience. Nothing wrong with that, but I wouldn't go searching for it based on the show must go on basis. Michael Dean wrote, I'm curious if anyone would buy your podcast. It's popular, but isn't it popular because of you? How many of the listeners would stay if it were the same name, but had some other guy talking about stocks? Paul Puri wrote, I'm not only coming to you as a podcaster, but I also listen to your show as well. I enjoy it very much, but honestly, I have to tell you that the content is not the only reason I listen. I feel the show has a lot to do with your personality, and I listen because of the host, as well as what is being said. I'm sure the show could carry on if someone else took it over, but how long before people start missing you? I don't think it's an easy decision. I have pod-faded and sold the name of the show, but it would not be the same show without me. Good luck with your decision. Fly Swatter said, I almost pod-faded Coffee and Tea Show because I have barely any audience, but I kept it going because I love doing it and I'm making lots of friends through the show. Plus, that's where I learned to edit audio. Because the audience is so small, I feel free to try things out and not follow any specific agenda. If I stopped loving it, I would stop doing it. Since you have a large listening audience, you should do a final show and explain yourself to them. You may even have someone in your audience who would like to take over the podcast. Maybe you could even train them. I think that's fair. I hate it when the shows just go away. I get so involved with podcasting hosts that I really care about them and worry that something terrible has happened to them. But hey, I'm kind of nuts. Laura. You know, that's true. I remember when I first started doing my show back in December, I had been listening for weeks to an investing show. I wonder if any of you had listened to The Indie Analysts. You remember those? Artie and Schnitz, I think were their screen names. And they claimed to be two guys on Main Street who were sitting around talking about stocks. Their show was unique, and their audio quality was so very poor that they even joked on the podcast that they're recording it on a reel-to-reel tape. Well, I haven't heard reel-to-reel tapes that sound a whole lot better than theirs. Theirs was recorded at the lowest sampling rate, the lowest bit rate. A lot of background noise, people talking in it. But it still was all about the content, wasn't it? But they suddenly quit, and it's just gone. The whole website's gone and everything. It's really quite sudden and abrupt and leaves you with an unsettled feeling when you get to know somebody like that, and they just go away. I have the joy of telling you that I had lunch this week with another podcaster. We met in Reston, Virginia, went to the Rio Grande Cafe Mexican restaurant. The person I met with was Mike O'Zane of the Manager Tools podcast. We had a fantastic lunch, sat around for a couple hours talking about podcasting. I mentioned to him at that time that I'm wondering what to do with my show. Should I keep it going? I've got, you know, about 4,000 downloads per show, and I know people tuning in to hear thoughts about investing and such. What should I do? And he thought it would be a shame to just quit, but he recognized that having a real job and a real family can sometimes take time away from doing podcasting. But Mike O'Zane and the Manager Tools guys, they are doing it not as a side job, but as part of their job. They actually have a great thing going there. And as I talk with him, and he talks about their plans for the show and the plans for their career, boy, they've got some good things going. And you know what I've discovered about Manager Tools is, well, first, let me tell you, I used to be a manager of people. I used to be a manager of some small consulting team. We consulted on computer security, and the jobs that we had were like week-long jobs. So it would take us weeks to write proposals, to try to get clients, and then it would take us 1 week to do the job, and then it would take us another week to write up the report. And there was this constant turnover of work and getting more work and finishing up work and doing the work and getting more work and doing more work and finishing up the work. It made the job horrible. And I thought, I'd never want to be a manager again. And so I thought I would have no need to listen to Manager Tools. But it turns out, you know, the name of that show should actually be Human Tools. Because it teaches you a whole lot more than how to be a good manager. It teaches you how to be a good employee. It teaches you how to be a good person. For example, the show on lunchtime etiquette was priceless. You have to go back a few weeks to pick that one up. They had a show on, first a show on how to apologize, and then a show following up on how to accept an apology. And if you think you know how to apologize, well, I'm sure you don't unless you've listened to that show on how to apologize, and why you should and when you should. Just classic info on how to be a human. Turning now to cultural events. So I've watched this season of Lost, and I guess I'm lost. I mean, I didn't like this season. I'll just come out and say it. This third season, fall season, whatever it was, where they were put in cages and put in aquariums, I didn't like it. I liked the one where they were pushing the button. I liked them out on the island. I liked the survival theme to it. I didn't like the hostage theme to it. So I'm hoping whatever they're going to do for the February rollout of the season 3.5 or whatever, that it'll be a whole lot better. Now there's a show that's going to come up in its place, and it's coming up this Wednesday, November, 15th, 2-hour special, Daybreak. You know what it looks like, don't you? It looks like Groundhog Day with a policeman instead of a weatherman. Now I'm not sure exactly what the time travel rules are going to be. I was in midway through watching the first act of the show out at abc.com. You can watch the first 20 minutes of the new Daybreak show. So the you know, the trailer of the show says there's this guy that wakes up and it's the same day every day, and I think they said it's going to be a different same day that he wakes up on somehow. Don't we all wake up on a different day anyway? But I'm going to watch that. I hope they have some of the cleverness in it, half of the cleverness in it that the movie Groundhog Day has. The beauty of the movie Groundhog Day was that Phil Connors learned from his mistakes. And it's just like a computer programmer that does trial by error programming. You know, you try something, it doesn't work. You try something, it finally works. So I'm hoping Daybreak will be just as clever. So my Xbox 360 that I bought a few weeks back, it just got more valuable. You've heard about this, right? Microsoft is announcing that they're going to allow you to buy HD movies and download them through the internet to your Xbox and watch them on your, presumably, your big screen TV hooked up to your Xbox. Now, one thing I must say about my combination of the Xbox 360 and the Sony Bravia TV that I bought is they don't play well together. Unfortunately, the Sony I bought was a 1080p set, the full resolution that you can get on an HD TV. And Xbox then, just a few weeks back, announced an upgrade to the Xbox 360 that would enable it to output 1080p. Well, I thought, oh joy! Well, when I went over to the Xbox and flipped it to the 1080p setting, the screen on the Sony went blank. and then you wait about 10, 15 seconds, and it comes back, you know, to the original setting that was on the Xbox. And it wouldn't cooperate. The Sony and the Xbox, they don't talk to each other properly. There's been talk that Xbox is going to push out another update to fix the issue. But I guess, you know, I'm looking at it, I'm not too worried about it. The 1080i output looks pretty darn good to me. And they talk about they don't have any games that do 1080p anyway. I do have on order the HD DVD drive that will allow HD DVD movies to be played back through the Xbox. And I may have to get a VGA cable then hooked up to the Sony Bravia in order to enable that signal to go through. Oh, there's always something in it, isn't there? There's always some technology that we have to wrestle with. When are we going to get to the point where we have enough technology, we can just say, all right, let's just stop. We've got all the technology and conveniences we need right now. Let's go on and get to work.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. A 12-step program for active investors. Step 12, invest and relax. My name is Paul, and I'm an active investor. Ah, we're home. I understand now that active investing is not only stressful, but unrewarding. There are lots of people crying out for some peace. There's a lot of people listening. It's time for us to sit down and talk about it. Try to build an understanding. What we feel can be altered in the moment we decide between passive investing and active investing, between the light and the dark side. So take a stand right here in this place, because we are building our own future. Just one by one, day by day, we're free to choose a life, an investment plan that's better for all of us. Invest, relax, and stay balanced. It is possible to invest and relax without fretting over the ups and downs of the market. This 12-step program has explained many advantages of passive indexing over active investing. Investing in this passive approach provides freedom from stress, anguish, and the panic of active investing. Remember, indexing is not designed to be a quick fix and does not carry the seductive quality of gambling or day trading. This approach neither has the sizzle the media likes, nor does it feed the adrenaline rush of chasing leads on returns. Active investing often leads to lost opportunity. Like most things of value in life, passive investing takes discipline and time to reap the rewards. It is the most intelligent and prudent way to build wealth over the long run. Indexing is a journey, a lifestyle, a process based on a solid academic foundation of empirical research. If you're stressed out over your investments, if you can't invest and relax, we're here to rescue you. We're here to bring you home.
Is there somewhere you can rescue me? Somewhere you can bring me home again? Somewhere you can rescue me? Rescue me. Rescue me.
I hope you enjoyed those
musical interpretations of the 12 steps. That for me, that is has been an extremely fun project to put together. When I started it, I had no idea that I would go completely 12 steps long using music in a whole new way. And I want to thank all of the artists whose music I've used from the PodSafe Music Network and from GarageBand.com for allowing their music to be used in this way, repurposed in this way, and mashed up with new information. I've tried to give you credit out at my website. If you missed any of the if you missed any of the 12 steps, go back in some previous shows. I think all the way back to step show 34 is to pick up the first one. And in the show notes, I've got credits to all the musicians who have contributed their music there. Thank you very much for that. What a wonderful resource. And maybe someday the RIAA will come around and allow us to use their music as well.
Speaking of technology that we now have in place, I'd like to give you this week's tool in the crib. I went out to Amazon.com the other day and I was looking for this book. And I'll tell you the name of the book that I was looking for. It's a book that's in my shopping cart and it's called The Smartest Investment Book You'll Ever Read. Subtitled The Simple Stress-Free Way to Reach Your Investment Goals, and it's in hardcover. So I've had this book in my shopping cart. Daniel Solon is the author of it. It just came out November 2nd or 6th or something. So I went into my shopping cart and I clicked on it and I pulled it up. And this tool that I have loaded tells me that this book is on order and coming soon to the Loudoun County Public Library. Click this link to place a request. Right inside the Amazon store, there's this link that shows up because of this tool I'm going to tell you about that tells me that this book is in my library. And if I click the link, I can reserve it. Now, how's that for saving some money? Of course, you may not live in Loudoun County, but there are other libraries that you can get to using BookBurrow, one of the Grease Monkey plugins. So this might be a couple of step process for you. First, you need to use the Firefox browser. All right, that's a free thing. You can go to firefox.com and get that. But you use the Firefox browser, then you go to Grease Monkey, and you get the plugin that enables plugins to be used inside the browser page. Then the plugin that you get for Grease Monkey is called BookBurrow, B-U-R-R-O. I'll have a link for that inside the tools page at madmoneymachine.com. And what that does is when you go look at books at amazon.com, it will tell you what that book costs at several other bookstores online. For example, this book, The Smartest Investment Book You'll Ever Read, is priced at Amazon at $13.57. BookBurrow tells me that Abe Books has it for $12.57. Amazon Marketplace has it for $12.41. Buy.com, $13.83. Half.com, $12.60. And Powell's, $19.95. Well, if you're lucky enough to live in Portland, you can go pay extra to get your copy of that book. Now, also for Grease Monkey then, my public library, out at their website, they told me to download something, and it adds it into Grease Monkey. It does the same thing as BookBurrow. It checks the book against the library, and if the library has a copy of that book, it'll tell you. This link will actually tell you whether the book is in the library, whether it's in the library but not available, or whether the library just doesn't have it, or whether it's on order like this book is. It saved me a lot of money, so it's a good value. That's why it's this show's tool in the crib. And like all the tools I've given you so far, this one's free. It's been a long, long time since we've looked at the Mad Money Machine Investment Guru Challenge out at simulator.zax.com, a free stock simulator that you can sign up for and play. The leader still at number one position is Mark Allen with $156,000. You know, everybody started out on, we started the game on April 3rd this year. gave everybody pretend $100,000. Mark has been able to trade his up to 53% gain on his money in less than 9 months. In at second, JNAP 35 with 139,000. Alif Brahim, number three, 128,000. Mark Ria, 126. And I got a message out at the show notes for show 45. Stock Traders Stew says, "Hi, Paul, I am enjoying the show and the stock market challenge. Just leaving a short message to tell everyone that my Mad Money Machine portfolio is gaining on the others. I hope there's enough year left for me to catch the leader. Good luck to all." And he also says, "Here's a pick for the Kramer portfolio, SIRI, Sirius Satellite Radio. He had the CEO on the other night and changed his vote from laggard to bye, bye, bye." Well, I see that Stock Trader Stew is at 20th position. We have in the game about, 226 participants, I think it looks like. Of course, some people came in a little late. Some people are still coming in. It's all right to come in now. If you come in now, you're going to be in, you're going to be given $100,000, and that will put you in 145th place out of 250. But remember, some of the people that got in early, they had dividend checks on their money. They had interest payments on their money. So there are some people, for example, that are hovering at around $100,800 or $100,700, something like that. Me, let's not talk about my particular performance in the game, if you don't mind. Well, if you must know, the Mad Money Machine account has $12,218 in it. I took some really enormous gambles on some options. I wanted to hit a home run. I didn't want to just win the game. I wanted to blow the game away. And so I bought lots of Google options and eBay puts and things, and none of them worked out. And it just goes to show me how risky playing options really is. How about the ETF portfolio? You know, I started off this game, this simulator, in the second quarter. And I put in there the ETF portfolio just to kind of track, use it as a baseline to see how well it would perform against all the various active traders. And it is in 37th place out of 226 entries. Isn't that pretty good? It's got $104,211. So in, 7 months, it's up 4.2%. Well, now that's pretty good. And how much thinking did we have to do for that ETF portfolio? How much trading? How much worrying? How much reading the Wall Street Journal? How much company reports? How much listening to conference calls? How much reading Kramer's book did we have to do in that ETF portfolio to get 4.2% in 7 months' time? None. It's a set it and forget it portfolio. How much taxes did we have to pay on trading stocks around? How much commissions did we have to pay to sell and trade those stocks? Well, we had to pay commissions to get into them. And we'll have to pay commissions if we ever want to get out of them. But because we're not trading, we don't pay anything. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time is Warren Buffett. No, it hopped out of Warren Buffett and into John P. Scordo, Esquire. He is a partner at the law firm of Pitney Hardin, LLP, and is admitted to the bars of the states of New Jersey and New York. What does that have to do with investing, you may ask? And rightfully so. The answer is, he runs a website called research-finance.com. It's not the prettiest website I've ever seen. In fact, it's one of the ugliest websites that I know of. At the top, it says, "Using the internet to keep up to date with the latest journal articles and working papers in finance." And then he's got this paragraph of text there. It says, introduction. "Keeping current with the most recent academic finance articles and working papers using only the internet is not easy. There is no central location where all of the articles are aggregated, and most journals require paid subscriptions and therefore do not ordinarily make their materials available for free over the internet. Luckily, some of the major journals allow upcoming papers to be downloaded before official publication, and the authors of working papers generally allow free access to their articles at their own personal website or their institution's website. I have tried to collect below a short list of sites that can be visited regularly to keep up to date on the latest leading research in finance, as well as more comprehensive lists of research-related and other interesting sites. And then he goes on to say that by visiting the leading sources identified below about once a week, you should be kept reasonably up to date on most major releases of research in finance. So what's it all about? These are articles from the academic field about things you should know about in finance, about stock markets, about markets in general. And if you're interested in getting down below the surface of information in finance, this is a fantastic place to go look. A wealth of information.
Bottom line is John Scordo has done us a tremendous service by aggregating information all in one place, and I encourage you to go take a look at research-finance.com. Congratulations, John, on being our guru for show 46. Here's what I'd like for you to do, if you don't mind. Go out to IFA.com. They sponsor this show, Index Funds Advisors. Along the left-hand side, scroll down just a little bit, you'll see under IFA Web Seminar a link that says, sign up for our free web seminar. And when they say free, it's free. There's no obligation. It's a web-based seminar, so you don't have to go anywhere. All you need to do is use your browser, and Brendan Connolly, an index funds advisor, will host this live talk about the advantages of index funds. And I know there are a lot of people that would benefit by seeing this online seminar, so please go sign up for that. You know, I still talk to people about stocks, and people come up to me and asking me about various stocks as if I knew what stocks to pick. I still know people who think that because the price of a stock is lower, they think the stock is cheaper and therefore a better value. They're looking for stocks with lower prices because they think they're getting a bargain. Just as if they're going down to the store and they see a shirt for $6 instead of $60. They think they're getting a better deal. So I know there's a need for a lot of education out there, and I encourage you to take advantage of it. And I'm certainly not implying that you don't know the difference between a low-priced stock and a high-priced stock, but I'll bet you could learn something through this seminar at IFA. Go to ifa.com and sign up for the free web seminar. Tell them Paul Douglas Boyer sent you. Well, that's going to do it for show 46. I'm so happy you've come along for the ride with me. The next show, show 47, is going to be different. It's going to be unusual. All I'll say now is it'll give you the 411 on the Mad Money Machine. So stay subscribed. This has been Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes knowing how to invest and relax to make a mad money machine. I'll see you next time. And here now, the entire song for Step 12 by none other than Howard Jones, Building Our Own Future. See you next time. Putting I do thank you for downloading and listening. Just promise not to expect too much from me. That way I'll be able to over-deliver.